Welcome to the Susan Winter Show. Here you'll find practical tips and tools to address your most pressing concerns on love, dating, and partnership. And now, here's your love and life mentor, Susan Winter.
Hello, everyone. It's Susan Winter here, and I'm excited to continue with my interviews because I get to ask people questions that I know you want to hear, people that you would like to learn from that have, I think, in my mind, really a key hold on what is fabulous and wonderful. And today I want to talk about happiness. Happiness, optimism. You know, they say in America that we're some of the unhappiest people that have everything. And yet I actually know a man who is, for the real deal, happy. And I mean, I've known him long enough that it's not a game. His name is Neil Wood. I have him here with me today. And Neil has over 35 years of experience as a sales rep, trainer, speaker, and business coach. He has given more than, 5,000 presentations in his career. I was trying to figure that out. It's like, oh my goodness, I can't even imagine how many you gave a week. And he's trained more than 50,000 sales representatives. Neil's also written and published 5 books. One of his most popular is Dating Success After 40, which talks about relationships and finding your ideal partner. From the happiest man I know, here is some information on how you can be happy and you can improve your life, your optimism, which will bleed over into your relationships and your profession. Neil, welcome. Nice to have you with me.
Thank you for having me today. It's a pleasure seeing you.
Well, you know, we've known each other now for about 12 years. Yeah. I met you on LinkedIn because I was doing a lot of writing and you actually kind of chatted me up on LinkedIn. And for my viewers and listeners, you will not believe this. I didn't really formally know Neil. We got on a video call. He was so nice, so agreeable, so warm. I agreed to go visit him in Boston and stay for a weekend because he wanted to help me launch Allowing Magnificence, one of my books. Now, I don't just go to places and stay with men I don't know. This is how much your effect had upon me. I was so relaxed, so comfortable. You introduced me to your lovely friends. We had a wonderful time. You showed me everything there. I mean, you've been my buddy ever since. And you are literally the happiest man I know.
Well, thank you, Susan. It was so interesting to connect with you on LinkedIn and set up a video call or and a phone call. It was easy. Maybe because we're both Sagittarius. We're born like
Yeah, we're both Sag. But I mean, it's, I may look like I'm very progressive, but I am very conservative. And like, just to go to somebody's house, I didn't know, but I was so comfortable with you. And I think that I want to talk about, let's talk about happiness because you're so fabulous. You are always warm. You're always sunny. And it's not just to me. You're this way with everyone. And I know that, you know, we tend to think that people that are happy are idiots. We tend to correlate like the brooding intellectual, you know, but I don't think that's true. I think it's mental discipline. But whatever happened, I know it isn't like you popped out of the womb and you had a blissful life. You did not. Right. You've had challenges.
Yeah.
How did you choose to be happy? What happened in your life? What was your thought process? How did you get there?
Well, thank you for sharing that. As you know, I grew up on welfare. I mean, you know, my father was overseas with the Navy. We had very little money. My mother had problems, you know, things and some addictions. Yep. So there was very little money. And so we collected welfare, which was so embarrassing to me.
Okay.
And it was good. Honestly, you know, one of the comments I thought about for today is things happen for a reason. Nice. And it was so good for me to grow up poor because it created a fire inside of me. And I started reading these books when I was 12 and 13 years old. The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale. You Can If You Think You Can. All those things about attitude. And I'd read about people who came from nothing.
Yeah.
Created greatness. Created a wonderful life. And I thought, well, if they can do it, I can do it. So it just changed my attitude. Now, here's the flip side of that. I know other people who grew up with me who are very poor. To this day, and I'm 68 years old, to this day, they're my age and they're still having a pity party. And you actually know someone like that.
I do.
It's like, my parents were mean to me. You know, and I, when people tell me that and they're 65 or 70 years old.
No, it's like, daddy was mean to me. You're 70. Stop with daddy was mean to you. I know.
Yeah, you got to get over that. You know, so as I shared something earlier, a friend of mine said, you got to build a bridge and get over it. It's just too. Now, granted, if you're 15, you've been treated poorly for the last 5 years. Okay, you can still hold on to that baggage. Eventually, when you become an adult, you got to let it go. And so I let go of all my baggage. I didn't have a pity party. I realized that if I wanted to be successful and happy and healthy and rich, it was all up to me. I had to accept responsibility. I couldn't just say, oh, my parents, you got to just stop that. So anyway, I embraced that whole, if I want to be successful, I want to be happy, I want to eventually have a wonderful family and a wonderful wife. That's all my responsibility, right? There's a gentleman who lives not too far from you. He's in Arizona. And I met him when I was in the Air Force. So I met him when I was 19 years old. And I was stationed in Aviano, Italy. And he became a mentor to me, a great friend. Now, I was 19. He was about 50. And I was chatting with him one day, and he said, you know, Neil, I taught you how to set goals. Look how much you've accomplished in a couple of years. He said, when you go back to the States, when your tour is over, I know you're going to be wildly successful. You become a millionaire, which is my dream, right, to become a millionaire. And I said, well, Tom, thank you, but I got to tell you, you don't know my background. I ran away from home at 16. I come from a really poor, broken family. And Tom stopped me dead in my tracks. He said, Neil, I'm sorry to hear that about your past. Let me share a story with you that may put things in perspective. And Susan, this was an aha moment. He said, I was a fighter pilot in Vietnam, flying jets all over Vietnam, dropping bombs. He said, my jet was attacked by a missile and I had to hit the canopy button and eject going 600 miles an hour. He said, when I hit the ground, I landed so hard that I shattered a leg and I was temporarily blind. He said, when I woke up, I was in Hanoi Hilton, which both you and I both know, it's not a resort.
Right.
It was prison camp. And right. He said, I was in there for 5 years.
Oh my God.
John McCain was one of his roommates at a point, wow. Prison mate. Wow. And he said, but here's what I learned when I get out. We can either carry the past with us like a heavy anchor, or just say, the rest of my life is in my hands. I am in charge and I am responsible. Susan, I got to tell you, when I think of some of the things I've seen people have a pity party for, nothing compares to Tom Kirk.
I know.
Nothing could ever happen to me that would be like Tom Kirk. And it put things in perspective. So, you know, to answer your question, yes, I did a lot of reading on my own. I found resources that talked about people who went through challenges but created a really beautiful, wonderful life. And then I had mentors along the way that just reinforced that thinking. And that was that's a game changer to this day. You know, I think you believe the same thing. We don't know what we don't know. So we're constantly learning every day. What more can I learn? How can I get better at Zoom? How can I be a better coach or consultant or whatever we're doing?
Oh, yeah.
And we wake up with passion. Like even Ellen and I were chatting because every morning we have cappuccino. Ellen's my wife, as you know. Every morning we have cappuccino from 7 to 7:30 and just eyeball to eyeball, no phones, no laptops. We just talk. And she said, what is it about you? You wake up.
So
you
if just, your wife wants to know, right? Yeah. We'll get her on the show. Yeah.
Oh my God. She said, you wake up, you leap out of bed. I don't leave 20 minutes. I leap like it's a brand new day. Let's go. Yeah. And to your point earlier, some people who have met me and don't know me like you do, or like Ellen or my closest friends think nobody can be that happy. It's got to be phony, but it's a mindset. I love what I do.
That's so important. But you locked in that mindset. I know, listen, there's some things that are innate. A 12-year-old, that's pretty special. But you were incentivized to do it. But this is exactly the tipping point, because I believe it's mental discipline. Mm-hmm. It's easy to replay and ruminate and go into a loop about the daddy did this, a mom did that, and they did. And I catch myself doing it sometimes to give an outline to who I am and why certain things are. But other than that, if you're not presenting that information to create a different end result or to ask for help on how would you have handled that differently? So here's where the wound came from. This is what I'm dealing with today. What would you do? If it's not action oriented at the end to fix it, I don't think that rumination actually screws us up, because those neural pathways, that it starts off with a little foot trail, they become like a glass autobahn where we have trained ourselves to go there. And it's very hard. It takes mental discipline to stop ruminating, to stop loop, to stop that negative story, that loop. So when you, listen, challenges happen. So in the real world, Neil, when you encounter a challenge or a down moment and you can feel that loop coming, how do you redirect it?
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring this up, because some people may watch this and say, oh, this is crazy. This guy never has a bad day. I don't have bad days, but I have moments like, oh boy, okay.
Okay.
You know what I do? And those are the times, if I can't come up with something on my own, I call one of my closest friends. And I have two very, very close friends I've known for 30 years. And I'll say, I need to run something by you. I need your advice. I find that is much more effective than saying, oh, woe is me, another bad thing happened. I did an experiment many years ago after reading about positivity and optimism and happiness. And it said, there was in this book, it talked about, it depends what you focus on.
Yeah.
You can focus on the good things in life or the negative. And I thought, okay, let me just try this. So one day, let's say Monday, I focused on everything positive that I could find in my day. It's really cool. Really cool. I felt really energized. And the next day I had to buckle down and say, okay, now I'm going to flip the switch. I'm going to find everything negative that I can find. And I found it. And it made me so bummed out by the end of the day. And I realized that what we focus on expands.
Yep.
And it's our choice every day to look for the good things or look for the bad things, because both are out there. And we do find what we're searching for. And after noticing how I felt, because we know ourselves, we know how we feel in our gut, I said, granted, bad things do happen, but there are a heck of a lot of good things that happen. And that's what I'm going to focus on each day. So when I do have a moment that just knocks me on my butt, and yes, and I've been through some tough times, and you have seen some of those tough times.
Yeah.
I've got to regroup. I've got to call a friend and say, okay, let me talk this out. Not whine and moan and complain and blah, 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 but let me talk this out and tell you what's going on. I'd love to get your advice on this. What do I do? So I think it's important to have a good friend to talk to. Or a therapist to just say, I just got to air some things out. I just need a sounding board. But yeah, negative things happen. I was thinking of this, getting prepared for this call. I was managing a sales team in Boston. This is back in the 80s. And one of our colleagues came in and he was drenched. It was pouring out. I said, Tony, what happened? He said, oh my God, I got a flat on the way to work. He had to drive an hour to work.
Okay.
And he said, so I fixed the flat, and then I was speeding and I got stopped by the police and I got a speeding ticket. Now this was 8:30 in the morning. He said, this day is going to be awful. Well, how's that for positive thinking, right?
Right.
You become what you think about most. I said, Tony, I'll tell you what. I know you have a dry suit, some dry clothing over there. Why don't you take a couple hours, go to get a cup of coffee, grab something to eat, come on back dry and ready. And at 10:30, why don't you start a brand new day? I didn't want him to waste a whole day. Right? Just thinking negatively. He came back refreshed, better frame of mind. We ended up having a real good day as a team.
So what I love that I heard, okay, these are great stories. What I love that I heard is that when you feel it coming on, the negative thought, the loop, the obsession, the rumination, self-doubt, criticism, whatever's going on, you have an action step to reroute rather than go into the loop. Yours is to think about it for a moment and contact somebody. Now, not everybody has that mentor, right, that person who's going to be there for them, right? So we have to recognize it. One, you recognize it, and two, you interrupt it. So I think that's very important, because, you know, I loved what you said about going to the positive, because that's a great training tool. It's really hard. Emmett Fox wrote a little pamphlet years ago, the seven day mental diet. And so he's a great metaphysician, old school, right? And was writing about to have a diet that for 7 days, everything you think is positive. He said, this is going to be the hardest diet you've ever had in your life. You won't be able to make it. And if you have an errant thought, you start all over again. I'm like, you'll be thinking positively for the rest of your life. And then I thought, I guess that's his point, right? Yeah. So rerouting it, this reminds me of, so I had a golf pro, great golf pro. He had a thing he called anchoring. Do you know what that is? Anchoring? Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Okay, he's a guy, right? So he would have a good shot. And then he'd go, kind of puff like guys yeah. do. And what he did was he was sitting in that moment of good. He was connecting. I did a good thing. Here's how it feels, getting it into his body, anchoring everything that had. So he was encapsulating this moment, replaying yeah. it, letting it sink in as fortitude. It's like money in the bank for a rainy day.
That's right.
And so I just heard a podcast recently where they were talking about anchoring. Like you were looking for the good things. You didn't even know you were anchoring and you were mm-hmm. anchoring. Like, oh, isn't the sky beautiful? It's a beautiful day. These are the tools to make us happier. They're yeah. actual tools. You do a lot of it innately. You just have that gift. But not only do you have it innately, but you do it methodically. You do it here, but you did it naturally. You're kind of a natural. But for the rest of us, these tools are so helpful because we can interrupt those patterns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I with all my years of studying and reading and learning more about optimism, even Simon Sinek has a blog and a YouTube on optimism. And he said, it's not about just waking up saying, it's a great day. It's not phoniness. It's what can I look at that I'm grateful for, that I'm happy about? And I got to tell you, I only told you a portion of the story. When I was just a young child up until 12 or 13, no matter what I did, my mother would always say, you are such a freaking loser. You'll always be a loser. And yet I was a good athlete as a kid.
I know.
And that burned me. You know what? Anytime I had success, I hit a home run or threw a no hitter as a pitcher or became class president in seventh grade or eighth grade, I always said to myself, you're a winner. You're a winner. You're a winner. So our thoughts are like muscles, right? The ones we focus on the longest yep. become the strongest. And when I see people, I remember meeting a guy in Las Vegas. I had just given a 1-hour keynote presentation to 500 people. And I love that stuff. And getting up on stage and looking around, you've done it. You see the smiles and people love the stories. And the next guy I passed was going up on stage next. And he said, oh, Neil, your speech was incredible. I hope I don't blow it like I did last week. And I said, John, hold on just for a sec. What was the best presentation you gave? He said, this ties into your anchoring. He said, oh my God, a month ago, I was in Denver. And he went into this story about what happened and the results and the crowd cheering. I said, that's what you want to be thinking about before you come
on. So good. You're such a good man. Oh my gosh. Because imagine you're going on after this incredible actor. You're like, oh no, what do I do now? Oh, that was so brilliant and so kind of you, really.
Well,
it was so kind. Yeah. So, okay, so if we don't have somebody to talk to and we don't have a brilliant moment, we can anchor to something in the past that was a win. I'd heard that that was a real, like, that changes the brain chemistry, that we have to do that. So yeah. Nowadays, okay, so I'm going to give you my little spiel about the clickbait titles and the clickbait stuff that comes across news. So I have a philosophy that it's an observation. There are two things to grab our attention all day long that we have to be aware of. And it's these titles, these things that scare us and that taunt us. So there are two categories. They will terrify us. Like, you know, disease in Hull, Massachusetts, you know, is your partner cheating? Five signs if they have all these things, or they taunt us with these unrealistic things that are the snake oil they're selling us, like have a girlfriend in 10 days, you can have a girlfriend, or you too can make $100,000 from home this weekend. And so these things are told to people like myself, like you, like anybody in YouTube, anybody in marketing, any kind of outlet media to grab our attention. Yeah. They grab our attention. Once we're in there, it has nothing to do with that. You know, like five celebrities that have a sixth toe that you didn't know. So you're looking because they have a picture of Brad Pitt. And it's like, does Brad Pitt have six toes? So you're going. So these things hijack our brain. And social media and the news nowadays have got us so primed to react and to be fearful and to be guarded and to be histrionic that we really have to pare back and constantly teach ourselves to not be taunted or tricked, because that's hijacking our thinking too, which can create, I'm looking at all the hysteria. Anytime there's a new political, whatever, a new law, the presentation is the very worst case scenario, and it's feeding into our frenzies and it's feeding into our fears. And in a world where we're surrounded by this all day long, what's your go-to?
I don't watch the news. I don't. it's just negative. I'll share a story with you on that. You know, I have a favorite daughter and two favorite sons. When Nikki, my oldest, was 6 years old, I tucked him in at bed and I said, "Hey, Nikki, how was your day?" He said, "Oh, Daddy, 6 years old, I've had the worst day of my life." I was like, "Oh my God, Nikki, what happened?" And he said, "I fell down in the driveway. Look, I scratched my knee. When I fell, I broke my favorite toy. I had a fight, a disagreement with my best friend ever, my best friend in my whole lifetime." They had known each other 2 weeks. We had just moved to the neighborhood. Best friend ever. And he went on and on and on for maybe about 4 minutes about all the bad things. I realized, because you and I have studied psychology and the mind, I realized that before bedtime, the reel he was playing in his mind was almost like us watching the evening news. It was all negative. Yeah. And I realized I had to change the tape. So I said, "Well, Nikki, I'm sorry all that happened. I love you like crazy. What was the best part of your day?" And your brain will act like a filter depending on what you want to feed it. He said, "Oh my God, Dad, we went to the zoo with Mom. I saw this great big giraffe. This lion roared." He went on and on and on for 5 minutes. He went to bed happy. How do you think he woke up? Happy.
Neil, but you're a saint. We don't always have you in our life as a daddy or as a friend to call.
Right. That's right. Well, Susan, here's what happened. From that night on, let me see, he was six, up until they were about 11, my boys, we did it every single night. Even I was traveling, I was all over the country speaking on stages, I would call from the hotel and they'd say, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy, let us tell you about the best part of our day." And it was just awesome because all of a sudden, this is what they focused on. And isn't it like us? We depend what we focus on. I mean, we decide what we focus on. We have 60,000 thoughts every single day going through this brain. 60,000. How many of those are positive and encouraging versus, "I'm such a loser. Oh, I'm fat. I don't like my hair. I don't." Stop it. We were taught to criticize ourselves. That is not innate. We were taught. I believe we can flip that switch and say, "Wait a minute, now let me just do the mirror test each morning. I'm going to look in the mirror and say one thing I like about myself." Now, some people, when I've shared that on stage, people are like, "No, I can't look in the mirror and say, I am so good looking." I said, "Really? But you can look in the mirror and say, I look like crap today? Really? Who sold you on that plan?" Right? So with our children, we raise optimists. Now, I said we did it till 11 or 12 because after that, you know, puberty hits and I know nothing. All of a sudden, I'm stupid. And so, right. But you know,
you're just dead.
They remember that to this day. And it's one of the things I talk about in every presentation, all the 5,000 presentations I've given, I always close with a story about the best part of the day. And you decide what you want to focus on because it's your choice. You know, and one choice will make you happy. And one choice will drain you.
I'm sorry. Say that again so we can hear it.
Yeah, so one choice, if you decide to look at the positives, It will make you happy. It will energize you. Focusing on the things you're grateful for, the relationships that are in your life that are really energizing. Or you can focus on the negatives. I'm not enough. I'm not tall enough. I'm not rich enough. I'm not in shape enough. You focus on that stuff, it's going to drain you. It's just like a negative conversation that we talked about earlier with somebody who's just constantly depressed every single day. That's going to drain your battery, your life battery, your brain battery. So again, it's our choice every day on what we want to focus on. The thoughts I focus on and the things I focus on every day keep me happy. It's that simple.
You know, there's so much to unpack here because as social animals, we are innately drawn to figuring out where we are in any pack or pecking order. And I think I never was more aware of this than when I was told I had to get an Instagram presence in 2019, because it's like, oh yeah, now you have to be on Instagram, which I do these things, Neil, you know me well enough that I really do it for business. When I started Facebook, my criteria for friend was, these are people who will take my call at 2 a.m. So I didn't have a whole lot of friends. I didn't have thousands, believe me, right? But I look at Instagram and I look at the lifestyle that's manufactured. I look at the bodies. Many of them are real deal and others are not. And I look at, oh God, and I look at that and I think of young people that compare themselves to these amazingly wealthy, successful people or presenting that way, and how disastrous that has been, and mental health for younger people with the online presence. And I'm very much encouraged that many of these schools are asking their kids to put their phones away until they're 16 or to put them away in the class so they can concentrate. So, you know, that we have to preserve a foundation of how to think our way through to the truth of who we are. And it's very difficult. We can't help but compare. It's part of what animals do. We can't help but notice the things that the wild bear that could trigger us, or the tornado coming through Hull that's going to wipe out exactly where you live, you know, and then you get to the end of it and it's a shoe advertisement or something for a sailboat or something, you know, that it had nothing to do. So we have to be vigilant, but these tools are so helpful to train ourselves, because so many people, like obsession is a huge part of the dating thing. People get into an obsessive loop about somebody and they can't get out. And this is fundamental to breaking any loop. You've interrupted the pattern. You've gone to some place, either a person or a place in your mind that you know to go to shift it to its positive opposite. That's what, you know, positive affirmations are. This is, I mean, it's so brilliant, but you have done this since 12.
Yeah, I have. Yeah. So I've had many years of training.
I know. That's why I say you are the happiest, most optimistic person I know. And it's infectious. And I have to tell my listeners one little side story, because I think it's so Neil. And let me tell me if I'm saying this properly, that you were you contacted by Facebook or by some kind of organization? Neil's photos, because he's happy, really happy, not a hi, I'm happy. But, you know, all his photos on Facebook, it was the number one profile stolen for con artists scamming women to fall in love, right? Neil, what was the story about that? Because it radiates.
It's interesting. I got a phone call one day from South Carolina, and the woman says, my mother has been in love with you for 6 months. And I said, what's your mom's name? Because I was with somebody else up here. And she said, we have pictures of you all over her wall. She is crazy about you. And I Googled and found out that you actually don't have a Southern accent. You actually live in the Boston area and you have your own consulting company. And she was on Christian.com, Christian Mingles or something like that. And there was pictures of me with a profile, and she spoke to me, never in person, eyeball to eyeball, never in person, but by phone and by Zoom and things like that. And as we were having this chat, she said, and you don't have a South American accent, do you? I said, no. We don't have that in Boston. Anyway, unfortunately, this guy, it's called catfishing. You're familiar with it. He posed as somebody else and said, I'm in love with you. The most beautiful woman I've ever met in the world, blah, blah, blah. And she loaned him $50,000.
That's only one of the cases.
That's one of the cases. I've had 36 phone calls and who knows how many others from a variety of dating sites, even Match. So Facebook got to a point where they said there was a profile created with your photo because they could do facial recognition.
Right.
Is this also you? And I tell Facebook, no, this is not me. Please delete it and block it. But these guys can, these people can create a new profile in a second. Right. Using the same photos. So it was sad. And I felt badly for the women. But, you know, the point of the story is don't loan money to anybody you've never met in person, especially when you get a call. You get a message from Saudi Arabia or Newfoundland or Denmark. You're the most beautiful woman I've ever met. And you live in Boston. How's that going to work out?
I know
there are some beautiful women elsewhere. But anyway, it's sad. And some people said, oh, you're so famous. Everybody wants to look like you. I'm like, I'm good with that. I don't want to be famous like that.
I think, you know, because you're so warm and because you're so present that it just exudes in the photos and they want it to be you. But I know that's a little side note. I remember us talking about that. But I you had Optimist Island. Do you still have Optimist Island? Tell me about
it. I do. And my license plate is Optimist also.
Okay. So you're steeped in this stuff. This isn't necessarily the work you do, but this is the who you are, right?
Absolutely right. Yeah. So when I drive through town, people like wave. I've got the convertible top down. You have a new Mercedes now. And, you know, people are like, hey, Optimist. I live it. It's just the way I live every single day. And again, going back to what you asked about Susan, I have some moments where I'm like, oh boy, okay, I didn't see this one coming. I just got blindsided. How can I get over? What can I do? What's the solution to this? And I'll brainstorm. And if I can look back to times in my life where I went through something like that and remember, okay, here's how I overcame that, or I just pick up the phone and call a friend. So, but no, I this is who I am. You know, I've been like this a long time.
I love the resilience. I love the fact that so for our listeners and for our viewers, you know, the fact that we can take the existing factors that we have in our life. Things happened we couldn't control when we were younger.
Yep.
And reconfigure the story. First, we have to let go of the story. We have to realize we have the ability to change the story. We have to use the mental discipline to not allow ourselves to be sucked back into the drama story that keeps us stuck, and then apply these very specific actions to interrupt the story and to look for a different reality. Because I know, so it's work, okay? Can we be honest about it? Mental discipline is work. This is how you have great athletes. I mean, especially you're playing a game like golf, there is so long in between the shots to beat yourself up. Tennis, you don't have much of a chance. I mean, it's just like you're just doing the next thing. But golf is one of the hardest because there's so much time to ruminate. And you know, I know mental discipline is something that separates top athletes from amateurs and those who want to be top athletes. So I think, so when I go into YouTube, there's something called TubeBuddy. I've just learned about SEO. Thank you to my buddy, Jonathan Aslay. And none of my titles were ever SEO friendly. I didn't even know what it was. I didn't have my website attached to SEO. I just work all the time. So what happened is I'll go into YouTube and I'll be looking for things that I want to talk about. And it'll say the top things are, make him love me while I sleep subliminal, you know, attract him to me unconsciously. It's the magical thinking. Life is going to get better when I sleep. Life is going to get better without my direct working at it. Self-discipline. And I'm here to say, I'm sorry. I'm going to be mean mommy here. No, it's not. That's a fantasy. You have to actually catch your thoughts and train them to be good little doggies. Right. Or they're going to run out of the door every time you open up the door and go back to where they want to go, right?
You're right. Absolutely. It is a lot of work. And, you know, some of the examples I give, since you brought golf up, I always like to talk to folks about golfers or professional football players or professional athletes, as you mentioned. Now, they are the best in the world, the top 0.1% in the world. And yet, every single day, they're practicing, fine-tuning, trying to get a little better. Scottie Scheffler, number one golfer in the world 2 years ago, yet he had missed some putts. So he talked to his lifetime coach, golfing coach. He said, I want to hire a putting coach to help me. And this putting coach was famous. He said, because if I can just get one stroke better in a tournament, I can win more money. The following year, last year, 2024, he won $38 million. He got a little bit better, one stroke. And people are like, Neil, come on, one stroke. Look at the
result. Golf.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
One stroke wins. And by the way, that's one stroke after 4 days of golf. They were a quarter of a stroke better each day, on average, quarter of a stroke. So what I share with the audiences I talk to is, how can you get better? Can you improve your thinking? Can you improve your goal setting, your visualization? Can you improve putting, in a sense, time limits? So when people ask me about goal setting, I say, you've got to be specific. By when, how much? Not, some people say, Neil, I want to be rich one day. What does that mean to you? Does that mean earn $100,000, earn $1 million? What does that mean? You've got to put numbers on it. You've got to put something that's measurable and identifiable and something attainable. Now, jokingly, you said, you talked about, oh, in 10 days, you can make $100,000. Really? Right? So, I mean, the goals have to be realistic. But yeah. I remember meeting Jack Canfield, who has written Chicken Soup for the Soul and sold millions and millions and hundreds of millions. And he said, you know, I've learned over the years, it's really important to know what you want. What do you want? And that's one of the things that ties into my happiness. I know what I want. And I know what we can accomplish. My wife and I are working really hard towards some things and eventually having a place in Italy, in Venice.
I know, so you travel there a lot. So this is where the two of you want to live, right?
Yes.
So you're working together for that goal.
That's exactly right. So with that, we wake up and like on a Sunday morning and we never watch the news. By the way, I'm informed. I do read whatever every morning to see, all right, is the world still whirling? Okay, good. Now let's go back to reality. But Sunday morning, we'll sit with a cappuccino and watch YouTube videos from Italy, Sardinia, Venice, whatever. It's just fun entertainment. But the important thing that Jack mentioned is you got to know what you want. And many people are wandering around, gee, I want to be in shape one day. I want to be rich. I want to, by when and what are you going to do about it? I mean, you've got to take ownership. It's our responsibility when it comes to getting a career that we really love or leaving them one that we hate, getting in a relationship that really fulfills us versus leaving a toxic relationship.
Right.
And you know this, you're the expert on this. You've got to have the courage to say, this is not what I want. I deserve better and I want better. Two words for the toxic, you know, narcissist, goodbye. And you know, I went through this. You know that.
We've all had our experiences where our friends held their breath and went, I know. It's a rite of passage because look at where you are now. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Happy is, I mean, just a great, great, loving relationship.
Okay. Let's talk about why this is so important for the ultimately most beautiful relationship. This kind of thinking.
I think every day throughout the day, what I really treasure about Ellen, the things I love. And by the way, we're very similar. She's not as enthusiastic or optimistic, but she's certainly not negative.
It could be, Neil. Come on. Nobody has it dialed up like you do. That's like for real.
Well, I come home after being wherever, maybe a golf tournament or out and about and traveling. And I say to the neighbors, hey, you know, hi, Jim. How are things? Blah, blah. Ellen wants to come home from work. She's kind of come into the house and just be us chat. And she won't give me grief about it, but I'm much more outgoing and I want to know my world. I want to know the circle around me. And she knows everybody, but she treasures our time.
Yeah.
She didn't have that in her first long-term relationship. Didn't have that. It was quite the opposite, actually. And so she cherishes, and she said this to me when we were having coffee this morning. She said, I've never been treated like this in my life. And I love this. And thank you. You know, I'd take her to the ferry boat to Boston at 8 a.m. I'd pick her up at 8 p.m. Now she's a therapist now.
Yep.
And she, you know, the first couple of hours she's in Boston working out and exercising and running and all that stuff. But when she leaves, I've packed a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for her, a yogurt and a banana. When she gets home, dinner's ready. So I love doing it. It's not a chore for me. I wake up while I'm brewing my coffee and I'm making her sandwich. I'm smiling because that's the way, as an Italian guy, it's how I show my love. It's sharing kindness, doing kind things for the people that are really important to me. That's another thing that makes me happy.
Well, I think that, you know, so many people have been involved with somebody that they loved. And the person didn't love themselves, didn't like themselves. The
yeah.
person brought negativity into the relationship. And they, you know, like there were a lot of things that were good. But when somebody is a downer, when somebody always gets caught in the story, gets caught in the loop, it's really hard to get to conflict resolution in a relationship. So incumbent upon us would be to learn this mental discipline, get these tools to anchor into the good every day and anchor into the good about our relationship. That's like, again, more money in the bank, because there are going to be a lot of things that our mate does that they were thoughtless, selfish, I don't know, involved in something else, busy, distracted. And the more that we can remember, oh, like that was a really beautiful moment that they took, and the more we can be observant of it, not just in our world, but in our relationship, I think that that kind of anchoring makes you a very solid partner, and it eradicates a lot of the resentment that we could have building up.
Well, to go into something that you just talked about, it does. It puts deposits in the emotional bank account.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah. I have all day to do whatever I want.
And what I know, you rat, you. 3 hours at the gym. I'm like,
well, by the way, that's another good habit that leads to
my
habit.
I know. I've got to do the same thing too. I got to AI me completely and then I'll be good.
Yeah.
I know, so that's my goal. I want to AI me totally. Go to the gym.
It's one of the things people say, well, I wish I felt better. I wish I had more energy. And you look at what they eat and what their daily habits mm-hmm. are, and our habits add up. And now some people say, well, I don't have time to exercise. You got to make the time. You just have to make the time. You got to put in your calendar and make the time. Otherwise, you won't find the time. You got to make it. But one of the things I make sure is, and Ellen loves to exercise, so Monday through Friday, she's go, go, go at work. On weekends, it's our time. I don't play golf. I don't play in tournaments. The only time I'll golf is if I'm with Ellen. Oh. And she's learned how to play and she loves it. And she's a lot of fun. But our weekends, that's our special time.
I know you even took a call from me on a Sunday, which I was amazed because I didn't know that that was the weekend time. But you took a call anyway.
I know, but you're special. You're the friend I could call at 2 a.m. and say, I need to chat. I need your advice, Susan.
So to encourage everybody that's listening, I am getting into topics that, yeah, there may not be directly about like, why didn't he call me back? Or does this person love me? And are they good for me? But all these things are building a stronger you. And when you're sorted and happy and good, one, you're good. If you're looking for love, you're just so much more relaxed because you're happy with your own life. And that is a skill that can be developed. It's not a magical thing that you get because your parents live in Bel Air and your trust fund is $39 million. That's not it. We've learned there are just as many unhappy people that are incredibly wealthy as there are people that are struggling to find food tonight. So happiness is an inside job that we have to really cultivate. Neil, I love the conversation that we've had. Are there any last tips that you want to give from your breadth of your entire life experience that can maybe persuade, help, or a hack that somebody might be able to get into if they're in a jam and they want to feel optimistic, they want to bring their mood back up? Is there some parting word that you can leave for us?
A couple of things. One, I like to refer to this as a checkup from the neck up. Make a list. And by the way, a good friend will help you with that list. What do you like about yourself? Instead of putting yourself down, what do you actually like? Are you honest? Are you kind? Do you know how to love people? Do you create good friendship? What do you like about yourself? It's a personal inventory, checkup from the neck up. Now, I'll bet most people, if they had some help with a good friend, they could probably write down 50 things, maybe 25, maybe 50. It's important to know, you know, who are you? What do you love about yourself? Self-love is really important. It's a boost to the self-esteem. And when we feel good about ourselves, whatever we feel inside, doesn't that show up here?
Oh, obviously. Yes.
Yes. Yes. And since you're the relationship expert, you know that one of the things I wrote about in the book, The Dating Success After 40, is in one of the chapters, I ask people, know what you want. What are you looking for in a great mate? Do you want a couch potato? No judgment here. Or do you want someone who's active and wants to go to the, you know, go to yoga, go for a beach
right.
walk, go for a bike? What do you want? Again, it goes back to Jack Canfield. What are you looking for? They're all out there. What do you want that's going to make you happy? It's important to know that. So those things have just made a big difference in my life, knowing what I want and also what you don't want. What are the deal breakers?
Yeah.
Right? We're old enough now. When we're 12, maybe we don't know. When we're 20, maybe we don't know because we don't know what's available out there.
Neil,
we
don't know what we know. What if there's a person who right now is listening to this and watching this and they have a partner that's just really kind of negative? Anything you can do about it?
Have a chat with them. Yes. See a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are not going to change.
I know.
We can think of many adults that we see in the news. They've been miserable for many, many years, and they're still miserable now. You can't change them. So, I mean, this is going to be tough love. You're going to make a decision. If you're 30 or 40 or 50 years old and this person's miserable and they're not changing, do you live with it? Or do you say, this has been a good run. I've enjoyed being with you. This doesn't work for me anymore. And if we can't overcome this hurdle, then we need to just go our separate directions. I wish you the best, yeah. But this is not what I want. And it'd be easy if in the 1930s, if someone's 59 and they say, I'm miserable, and their friend may say, well, look at the bright side. You're going to live another 3 or 4 years. The age of death was 65 back then, right? But now people are living to 90 and 100. And if you're miserable at 40, do you really want to do this another 40 years or 20?
There's the possibility exists that if you're with a partner, that is their dispositional go-to. For you to do it anyway, for you to do it for yourself, might be a wake-up call to them that there's a better possibility. Not saying it is, but living by example is a pretty strong influence. And so either way, we have to do it for ourselves, no matter what our mate's involved in. And these are hard decisions you have to make. But if you're preliminary and you're just out there dating, looking for somebody that takes a positive viewpoint on life is so nice, because there are going to be a lot of challenges in the relationship, right?
That's right. So, yeah, I'd say find someone you love, someone who loves you, and similar personality. Don't have to be identical.
Yep.
Like I said, Ellen and I are not cut from the same cloth, but pretty damn close. We both love our children. We're great parents and kind to people. And we have a close circle of really solid friendships. No negative Nellies in our circle. We don't have time.
I think also weeding out friends that are actually weeds. I mean, with my little garden out here, believe me, I have only a few months to take a look at it, but I know there's the beautiful plants. And don't you know, right next to it is a weed trying to... And
yes.
I remember doing major house cleaning, spring cleaning with my friend group, not filtering carefully enough for the people who wanted to know me and being able to measure how much they bring me down. And I got rid of so many people.
Yeah.
And I felt badly, but I had to do it because I needed my own energy. And Neil, I must have gotten rid of 10 or 12 people that were just... that I gave way too much to and got there was no reward. There was nothing on my end to be gained in any way. It was a job. Yeah. And when I got rid of those people, I felt so good. I didn't realize I don't have that many problems, and the problems I have, I pretty much know how to fix. But suddenly I was carrying the weight of all these people, fixing, healing, helping them. Because I've had this thing recently, just because I hear the call doesn't mean I always have to answer. Right. Like, we're responsible for ourselves. If I believe I'm responsible for myself, why do I also think, and I have to take care of you? It's nice if we're in a really mutual arrangement. But eliminating people that are not productive contributors to our life may seem harsh at first glance, but it will be the best self-help for you and probably for your relationship, because it frees you up to be right, to be clear on what you've got. So you've limited your circle. And you know what's funny? There's a void in the beginning. You get rid of people that are just Klingons, or they want you for resources or whatever. You're a great friend because you'll do everything that nobody else will. And then suddenly you realize, wait, I don't have people to play with. There's a little bit of that void. Mm-hmm. And then these people that are so amazing start coming in, because now there's room for them.
That's right. There's only so much time we have in each day and each year and each week. And the reason I answered your phone call when you called Sunday morning is because whenever I talk to you, it's like, Susan, how are you?
I knew there was romance time for you. I'm like, oh my God, what was I doing? Why was I not thinking Sunday afternoon? I should think like a couple. Think, I know my parents, Sundays were their romance time. You know, that's like, don't you want to leave the house? Okay. It's like, I figured it out later. But I think that in order to help ourselves, we have to look at the people with whom we associate. We have to get clear on that, fill in those gaps, do our inner work, and also, you know, cultivate our anchoring rewards and our happiness with our partner, and remember the good things that they've done. Because I know that when you start appreciating what your partner does, and I'm vigilant on this appreciation thing, I tell my followers, like, I don't care if they got up and got you a glass of water, they didn't have to do it. You tell them, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, you let them know that they're so wonderful. That's why I did that. You're so big and strong. And I took my mug away. I had it here because I have all this merch that says that, you know, because you're so big and strong, because I think it's important. So, Neil, I adore you as a human being. I mean, if I were in sales, I would so want you talking to my people to help them. I can't even believe 50,000 people and 5,000. Oh, my goodness. Speaking gigs, keynotes. Oh, my goodness. I'm going to leave all of your information in the show notes, but I just so want to thank you for being such a bright light in the world and for making your contribution to my interviews here and to my channel to hopefully give some people these tips and tools so that they can live a happier, more optimistic life.
Well, thank you. The one quote I will close with is, your past does not determine your future. You can make changes anytime you want. And to the point you just shared, we only have so much time for so many people in our world. We've got to just sift through, like, these people bring me down every time they call. I know it's difficult, but we only have so much time. Why not make it good time?
And not only that, when we're able to do that, better comes in. I've got the greatest people in my life now. I mean, they are... like, I mean, they're so good. And sometimes you got to get rid of somebody for years, but suddenly the relief is, oh my God, this person is so with me and I'm with them. And it's beautiful. So everybody, thank you so much. I love my interviews. I'll be talking about a lot of things that I think are important. There'll be world experts and there will be people that I just adore. And I think you should meet as well. And Neil, thank you so much for your time today. I really do appreciate it. Adore you, Neil.
Thank you, Susan. Anytime. Pleasure seeing you again.
Thank you, hon.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye.